Process here was, we like to become complacent and satisfied the way things are going, and different things, and we like everything instant. We live in the microwave world now.
Instapot
world now is even worse, but we like everything now.
Yeah.
Popcorn, put instead of that old pan popcorn, put it over the stove, getting it going, putting your own butter on it, and it takes a few extra minutes, but sure does taste good. Doctors might not like it because it might be hurting that, but it tastes extra good. Do it how you want to do it. Nowadays, our generations, well, we just get a bag of popcorn or a popcorn bucket or whatever, and we just shove it in the microwave or TV dinner. You know, and being a single guy, it's convenient. Yeah. I don't go to TV dinners because I don't like it. But sometimes you like a good home-cooked meal. You know, I get used to eating leftovers. I cook one day a week, and then I eat leftovers. So I hope you guys ate plenty of the noodles so that we don't have to eat so many leftovers. But point being is I like a good home-cooked meal. Or sometimes you just get that point, like, you're tasting those good, delicious mashed potatoes that are home cooked, and they're not instant because it's instant, easy, convenient, and the food don't spoil. It's economical. But as much potatoes I use. But what I'm saying is fresh potatoes that would spoil at my house. So sometimes, you know, I know how to peel a potato. I know how to cut it up and boil it, make a 5-course meal if I wanted to. But it's a lot of work. So sometimes I just go through life and I work, and I'm too busy working, but every once in a while I'm like, what I wouldn't want to do for a nice mashed potato meal and chicken and gravy and biscuits and, oh, you know, but that all involves time. We want everything now, and we have a tendency as Christians to do that. We want things now. And I come out to a thing, and it involves us, because why don't we want to do it? Because it's called, something's called of us to do. Something's expected of us to do. If I want that, I have to peel the potato. If I want that, I have to cook the chicken. If I want that, I have to go open the can of corn or the bag of corn or corn on the cob and peel it. It involves something of me doing something other than me going, okay, so it's 5 minutes, microwave, stir potatoes, put back in, and heat again. Well, that's easy enough, you know, and that's all it's expected of me.
Yeah.
It actually involves, I made a nice family dinner for my whole entire family for Christmas. I started at 9 a.m, and it ended at 5. I was pulling the biscuits out at 5. But it involved work. It involved me putting the ham on. And getting all the dressings on it, and then putting the turkey in, and cutting up the cranberry sauce, and it involved me getting the potatoes and peeling them, and fighting with my dog because she wanted to steal the potatoes, and making the gravy, and it required me to clean up. It called for more work for me.
Yeah.
You know, but it tasted good.
Oh yeah.
And I had plenty of leftovers, and I enjoyed every one of them until after I quit eating no more. But it involved me doing extra work. But sometimes, even as Christians, that's just physically, we become lazy and complacent because it's easy for me to go grab that TV dinner, throw it in, even though what's really good for me is that homemade meal. It's just going to cause me more work. And sometimes, as Christians, we become more complacent with God because if He's not going to do it now, we just don't wait. We just get up and we move on to something else. And try to satisfy our need however we want to satisfy it. Because God calls us, throughout the Bible, it tells us that God calls us to do something. It involves work. Our relationship with Him involves work. Sometimes He calls us to do something. They might be stories throughout the Bible of how the children of Israel did this, and this person did that, and that person did that. But it involves something on that, an action on their behalf that was not easy. Now, we go into Exodus chapter 13, I think it's 18, and but God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up hence out of the land of Egypt. And we're the same way God led us out. We were in captivity. Every one of us that are sitting here, anybody that's in the world, the sinners that are out there, they're in captivity. They're like in Egypt. They're slaves to a master. They can't control what they do. Their humanistical, I like that word, their humanistical side has control over them. They can't help themselves. It feels good, do it. That's just the way the world works. But we know that God calls us out to be different people. He called us out to be a different nation of people. And so it's just easy to, it's easy for someone to just have a box here. And life is a lot easier for some people when you have a box here and you just have somebody dictating. Move that box over here. Move that box over here. Move that box over here. I would personally get annoyed after a while. But we just keep on doing the exact same thing over and over and over again, even though it's annoying. I don't like helping my mother move her furniture because it's move it over here, now move it over here, move it over here, move it over here. And by the time the end of the time is done, I'm ready to walk out the door saying I'm done because it's annoying. But it's the same way with sin. We just keep on doing the exact same thing. Even though we want to stop doing this, we can't help ourselves. We just competitively just keep doing it, moving it back here, moving it back there. And that's because we're serving a master, or we're serving a master that doesn't really care. We're just keeping ourselves occupied by something stupid, so we really don't know the truth, and that we're missing much more. Then it comes down into chapter 14, and verse 12. It says, "Is it not the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians, for it has been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." Sometimes people of the world, they just think, well, this is all there is. It's just better to just stay with what I know. And sometimes that's what we do as Christians. We become complacent. We only go so far, and then we stuck right there. We're looking back like, it was much easier when I wasn't serving the Lord. It was much easier because nothing really was expected of me but this. It was much easier. And you were living your life. But there comes a point in time because God made it so they had to walk out of the wilderness, out of Egypt. He brought them out. But then there was something required of them, more required of them. He promised them Canaan's land, the promised land that he promised to Abraham. And they were going to go receive it. What did they do? They murmured and complained because they seen things through their own eyes. They weren't seeing them through God's eyes. And how they needed to be seen. And with God with us, we have nothing to fear. If God told us to do it, we can easily do it. But we just don't want to do the work. We become lazy. We just don't want to do the work. I have to say that there's multiple personalities. Some of them, it says in the Bible that gripped their hearts, and fear gripped their hearts, and they murmured and they complained and said, we surely can't go up because there's all this, and fear gripped them. And some of those probably were just like, I'm fine. But they would have swung probably either way, probably, because of the way the personalities were. Well, it was just easier just to wander through the wilderness. I don't have to put up an effort or what you call it. And probably those are the same ones that wanted to go back and eat the leeks and garlics and murmured and complained the whole time while they were going, because they just wanted to be satisfied. And that's what we do with God sometimes. We sit in the Bible, we read about that part of it, and we sit there and we say, boy, they were some kind of whiny, complaining people. But we do the exact same thing our own way to God. We get stuck doing the exact same thing. We murmur and complain because we're living in the instant world. Instant popcorn. Instant this, instant that. TV dinners. Instant pops. We don't want to do the extra work that's required of us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just a small thing. Compared to nowadays, I don't even like driving. and I have a car, and just going just 45 minutes seems like an eternity. Imagine what my grandparents had to do whenever they had to travel that far away, 45 minutes by horse. You know? And we'll complain about having a car and having to travel that far. It would take them 2 or 3 days, some of their journeys. Some of the journeys would take them 2 or 3 days. That takes us 1 day. You know, and we complain about that because we want everything now. We want it instantly. So we're not willing to do the work. We become lazy and complacent. And like I said, there's no such thing as a lazy Christian. Well, I believe there is. There can become lazy Christians because you know why? Devil's fine with that. You become complacent to where you're at. Souls ain't going to get saved by you. You're just moving through life, just skipping through, going to church, singing, blah, blah, feeling all good. But sometimes God calls you out to do something special. Mm-hmm. To witness to somebody. Or say something to somebody. Or calls you out to go visit somebody because you have them on your heart. You need to go do it. But I don't know how they'll accept me and this and that. Sometimes I might be the cashier person. You might need to say something. But then you're afraid of what they may say. Well, that's because we become complacent. We become lazy. I admit, I'm lazy to a certain point. Sometimes I just look at it and I go, picking my battles, buddy. Picking my battles. And I had a water line that leaked. And it broke. And it was in the middle of the night. Not middle of the night, but late. And all the stores were closed. Called my father, and he's like, well, I have somewhere else I got to be in the morning. Just shut your water off. Well, I wasn't going to be complacent with that because I know I needed water to at least flush the toilet. So I called Brother Dave. And he goes, I'll see what I can do. And lucky for me, he had a little cap to put on there, and he got it so I could turn the water off on the one side, and I still could have water up in my bathroom. Then he come back the next day, and he fixed it. It was expensive, but it was well worth it. Then I turned it on, I was washing, and I looked at the back side of the washer, and I seen water squirting up the back, and I go, uh-oh. Yep, uh-oh. Oh, well, I guess I got to finish washing my clothes at least. And then I mopped it all up. Can't get any worse. But then I was like, now I'm going to have to get a new washer, and this and that. And, oh, I was all bumming it all out, and I go, well, it's just easier to go buy another washer and this and that. And a friend of mine, he goes, I think it's fixable. He goes, all you got to do is take all these screws out and this and that. And I'm thinking, it's just easier to get a new washer. And sure enough, he goes, just take it apart and see if we can get the part at least. See what the problem is. So there I am, and they make it so you can't get it out. And it's three different types of screwdrivers. You know, they have the star one, they have bolts on there, they got the Phillips heads, they got this wire clip here that you gotta yank out, and you gotta take this clip off just to get that part off, and this and that. And I take it, and I put the water in there, get all that out, put the water to it, and I go, it's only leaking on one side, I could use my cold water. But I need the warm water because it cleans better. And took the part, and he looked it up on Amazon, I guess. He goes, you know, it's only $20. And I'm going, because I wanted to be lazy, it would cost me $600 to $700 for a washer, or $20 to fix that one. You know, just how complacent we went to be. Of course, it was a sight to see because I was sitting at my house, and I heard the sound, and I knew exactly what it was as soon as I heard it. And I go, uh-oh. And there's my dog looking through the window, and she's like, what is that? I had like Old Faithful shooting straight up, hitting the ceiling and going everywhere. And it wasn't just one water line, it was two water lines at once. And then I had an electric heater down there that was trying to unthaw the pipes. And I looked down and I go, hey, that's a pretty good heater, it's still running. And then this is even worse, I gotta get downstairs, turn my water off and step bay and thank you, Jesus. And I'll make sure I'm right with the Lord at the point in time because I'm going back there to unplug the thing. And I'm like, water, electric, don't mix. Jesus, Jesus. But it all worked out. Got it all taken care of. But I wanted to be lazy. So something was going to cost me $600 to $700 only cost me $20. And it's the same way, something that's going to cost somebody a lifetime and eternity, just because I wanted to be lazy, will cost them a lot more in the Christian walk. We have more to lose. Or we can even lose our own soul sometimes if we become so complacent as a lazy Christian. We can end up losing our own soul because we become complacent and we don't do everything that we need to be doing. And then we end up losing our own soul. Something that's a good illustration, though. $20, $600. A life in hell, a life in heaven. That's the difference. Extremely, because we just become complacent and satisfied. We don't want to go the extra measure. And there's different reasons why we did that. Another one in there, chapter 14, verse 13, is Moses said unto the people, fear ye not. Stand still and see that salvation of the Lord, which he will
shall show
to you two, that the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, it shall see them again no more forever. And there's going to become a day, the Bible tells us, there's going to become a day in the end of scriptures that Satan, we're not going to look back no more at him. There's going to come a day where he's going to be cast into an eternal pit forever and ever 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 and ever. There's going to come that day. He already has a promise in there to us. And we sit there, we fear what the enemy is going to do to us if we say something about God to somebody else and convert somebody over. Because it's just easier for us to sit still and be quiet and complacent, because they won't attack us. They won't say nothing bad against us. They won't pick on us. They won't be mean to us. They'll say horrible things about us if we start talking about Christ and Christ's love and preaching Jesus to them and God's love, because they don't want to hear it. Because they don't fully understand God's love. Because a lot of them may think that God's love, they only understand God's anger and his wrath. And that's how some churches, they will preach that fire and brimstone to the point to where people only think that God's just a God of judge. He is a God of judge. He's going to be a judge someday. But right now we're living in the time and point and place that yes, he does judge, just as a just father will judge his child and correct his child. He will judge us sometimes here on earth to get us straightened out. But as a parent, we do that to our children. I don't have children, but I do it to my nieces and nephews. I'll do what I have to do to them to let them know between right and wrong, safety and non-safety for them. Because I don't want them going out there and getting killed, or I don't want them going out there saying something stupid and being ignorant to somebody and getting the crap beat out of them. You know? But that's for their own well-being. You know? But as a parent, we do that. God does the same thing. But he's also our doctor. He's our healer as our doctor. We have to understand that. We come to him with a medical problem. And what you call it? He's our psychiatrist. You know? He's everything. Everything that we need, that we go to. We go to this for this and that thing for this, that. He's our supplier. He's everything to us. And we have to understand that. But most people don't want to understand. They only understand him to be the God of fire and brimstone. And who wants to serve a God like that? Well, we should be preaching the God of love and mercy. Now, you can go the other way. And we're not a church that preaches once saved, always saved. You can go too far the other way, where he's all love and mercy. And let's preach the truth. God is everything. God is love. He's mercy. He's the creator. He's our savior. He's our friend. He's our healer. But also there's going to become a day where he's our judge too. Yeah. We look at it and through. There was a prophet in the Bible. And he allowed things to happen in the church. Or in the temple. That should not have been. And God was angry. And very angry about it. He was upset about what was going on. He was not pleased. Because when somebody's doing something in your house and you're not pleased, if it's your house, and I come into your house and I do something that's not nice, and it's not pleasing to you, you're going to become angry, are you not? This is God's house. This area is God's house on the earth. And this is where we come to worship Him. And we should treat it as such. So at the temple, there were things that were happening, if you read the story about the priest. And he was allowing these things to happen in his church, in God's house. And they were not pleasing. And I believe this young man named, what, Samuel? Was a gift from God to this woman. Don't get me with all the names right now. But, so she dedicated him because she couldn't have a child. And she was so grateful that she'd have this child. She dedicated this child to God. And because she dedicated him to God, she gave him to the temple for whatever that priest wanted to use him for, whether lighting the candles or sweeping the floor or whatever. He was the work inside of the temple. But God had another plan for him because God called him out and said his name, Samuel, Samuel. And he kept on thinking it was the priest. Go get him some water at nighttime. It could have been various things. But he said he didn't call him. Didn't call him. Then it dawned on the priest what was really going on. And what was going on was as God was calling out Samuel. And the priest, he says, hey, he might have been a priest. He might have been a prophet probably too. I'm not sure what they were. They might have been both. I'm not sure. But anyway, you get the point of the story. The wise old priest said, it must be God that's calling him. So he said, tell, next time you hear your name, say, speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. Mm-hmm. And you know, then God told Samuel what was going to happen to the priest of that day. That he was going to take his life and how he was going to die and what was going to happen, down to the details. Because God had to judge the sin that was going on, the stuff that was going on that wasn't allowed and was not to be. And that was part of God's judgment. And what did that priest say after? Could you imagine being that small little boy and having your boss come to you and say, what did the Lord say? And have to repeat a judgment that God said. This is what God said to me, that this is what's going to happen. And when Samuel became of age, God did so. And I believe, if my memory serves me right, didn't he die right on the front steps of the temple or something? And it was a horrible death. But he says, my Lord knoweth best what he's doing, or whatever his words is. I don't have it in front of me. But he was fine with the judgment of God. Because he knew what he'd done was wrong. That was God's judgment. But sometimes some things are called of us as Christians that are not always so easy. Because we become so complacent, we just want to skip through. Oh, I'm just going to go to church and I'm going to go do this. And there's much more. You got to look through with different kinds of eyes. We need to look through it through God's eyes, the way he wants to see things. Sometimes we see somebody like, you might have a doctor that comes in and you're like, everybody likes this famous person. Okay? And everybody gets jealous because you won't come to your house. But then there's this sinner that wants them to come to his house. That might be this famous evangelist even. And this sinner might want them to come to the house. And you get this haughty spirit like, well, what about me? I'm trying to get scheduled in what you call. What about your soul? Your mind should be going, yeah, well, yeah, that would be a good idea for them to go over to this individual's house. Salvation could come to their house. You know? So our mind process becomes different. Because we want to have God's mind, we have to stop ourselves and let our humanistical nature kick out to where we see it the way God sees it. Because I might want somebody to come to my house. But then when somebody says, hey, they you got to meet this person, that person, Yeah, I want them to meet them, but then how is it going to glorify God? You know, by them meeting that person. Well, how can this benefit the kingdom of the Lord? What's more beneficial to my God? You know, and our God is the most important person that there is. You know, because if there's something, the point is there's something required of us. And we become lazy and complacent to where we're at because we don't want to go any further than where we're at. And honestly, we're a Pentecostal church, Pentecostal organization. Does the Spirit move as much as it should be moving? Is it moving as much as it should be moving? Are we allowing it to move? Or are we doing humanistical nature things to where we hinder the Spirit? Or where we have the service put into a box? Or we have it put into a system? Like, and even the people, us back there, now I'm not saying nothing about the pastors or anything. As a congregation, sometimes we tie our pastors' hands. Because we become complacent. I want to get out of here by a certain time. So, you know, you got to sing your two songs or one song or whatever it is. Hurry up, take the offering on Sunday morning because I got dinner to go. And hurry up there and say whatever you got to say. And get. Are you really getting anything out of that? Are you really getting anything out of that? Your mind process is, well, let's hurry up, get a few songs sung in. Let's take the offering and get you. Say whatever. And the attitude is just that. Say whatever you got to say, and then I'm going to get up, and I went to church, and I heard what you had to say. I feel happy for the few songs, and I don't think we really got a whole lot out of that. I don't think the Spirit had time to move in that, because the Spirit doesn't move instantaneously. It moves when it wants to move. It moves when the church is all in one accord. It moves when we're all in unison. It moves whenever it knows it's welcome. Because where it's welcome, it will linger. It will come. But it involves work as a congregation to get that and see God moving. And we have older ones that say, I remember seeing great healings. I remember people slaying in the Spirit. I remember this and I remember that. Well, that's great. But you're not dead yet. The fire's still not extinguished. It still inquires something of you. I don't care if you're 90 years old, 100 years old, or even my age. It still requires something of us to keep that fire alive inside of us. We want to see God move, but we don't want to do any of the work. You know, we wanted to see different things. There was a guy, I think it was Ezekiel, I believe his name was, or I can't remember, Malachi maybe, it's one of them. But I do know that there was another one where they were taken in captivity because they turned their back on the Lord. They lost sight of what the real purpose was. Every time the children of Israel lost focus on what their purpose was, they were taken in captivity. And there was other great men that were come out of that because they were not satisfied with that. They were not satisfied with being in captivity and time again. But there was one that went back and rebuilt the temple because the king said, you can go back and rebuild the walls and rebuild Jerusalem. But they had to have a trowel in one hand and a sword in another. That's some dedication. They could have built the wall 10 times faster with just a trowel and stone going. But they had required a little bit more of them. You know what I mean? It required a little bit more of them. Meshach, Meshach, and Abednego, they weren't complacent to bow down to a statue. They weren't complacent to that. Because they knew that they were called out and they stood at it. And you know what? They got them into the fiery furnace. But God was there with them. They still stood on God's promises. And guess what? He saw them through. He saw them through. And Daniel, he did the same thing. Now you're saying, well, I really don't want to die sometimes. Sometimes it involves us to die. Sometimes it might be metaphorically. And sometimes it might be physically. There are some missionaries that have gone to other countries and have died and preached the gospel. And it seemed like their word got nowhere to be seen. But then several years later, another missionary goes through there. And they all give their hearts to the Lord. Now, which one did the work? both of them together did the work, but it required of one to die. He went because God said, hey, I need you to go there. Well, that's not God, because he died. But he went as a lamb to the slaughter. He didn't fight them and hate them. He went like Jesus went. Whenever he was dying, he wasn't dying like screaming and yelling in hatred. He was dying and praying for their souls. He died in a manner that he became a testimony to them. They might have been headhunters or something. But whenever they die, when a Christian dies, he dies a different death. He dies one that's a testimony to others. Look at Stephen being stoned to death. He was one that was stoned to death. But his testimony, how far did it go? Paul, Saul, who became Paul? Stephen's ministry just continued through Paul and his ministry, and then went all the way up into Rome, because he died in Rome. But Paul made it all the way into Rome, the capital of the empire. But Stephen was just as important, because he played a part in that. And we all play a part, and it is an important part. You know? And God is capable when he says something. When they went up and they marched around, I love those marching songs. You know why? Because they marched around this city. They didn't have no weapons. They didn't have nothing. All they were required to do was use their feet, march. And on the last time that they marched, they shouted aloud and those walls came down. Why was that? It was because God was there. God was with them. But he led all those other ones wither away in the wilderness, the naysayers, the ones that were going to be complacent and lazy. They were satisfied with the leeks and garlic in Egypt and the captivity that they were in. He waited for a generation to rise up. And then he went in and he took the country. He knocked down Jericho. He took out mighty cities. He took out giants. They took out all this. But they didn't do it on their own. They did it with God. Even Caleb, at the age of 85 years old, he went up and took a mountain. And if you don't know anything back in these days, it's not like nowadays. They didn't go up with tanks. They didn't go up with guns. They didn't go up with all this other stuff. They went up with swords and bow and arrows, probably. And I don't even know back then if they even had bow and arrows. I think they did. Yes, David had one. So they did, but they were different kind of arrows. They weren't crossbows. They weren't modern. They were the old-fashioned, what do we call it? The recurve, I believe it is, as we know it. The recurve bow. So they had little bows, and they had swords and slingshots and armor, you know? And so if anybody knows anything about battle, he who has the high ground has the upper hand advantage. I didn't know anybody, if you guys didn't know that, but now you do. If you have the high ground, you have the upper hand advantage when you're fighting with bows and swords. Because it's easier for you to protect the top, because by the time they get up to the top, you can roll rocks down on them, you can throw stuff at them, the velocity is a lot faster, your range is a lot further. Everything is all upward advantage. But Caleb, at the age of 85, he went up onto a mountain and took the hill. And why was that? Because he put God first. And him and Joshua were the only two. Him and Joshua were the only two that were remaining through the wilderness, because their spirit was, we can do this. They weren't part of those ones that were murmuring and complaining and being ungrateful and being instant. They patiently waited for the stew to cook. They're like, okay, Lord, this is what you decided. So 40 years they wandered through the wilderness. Rose up one that wasn't complacent to be happy with walking through the wilderness. God said, hey, we can go up and we can take this. We can go up and we can take this country. Then we're going to go do it. And so they did. But then, after so many years, they become satisfied and complacent again. And they were taken into captivity again. because all these, every time that God pulled them out of captivity, every time that God really moved for them, even Gideon, every time you see these great men, we call them great men because they did something marvelous and the odds were against them. And it seems like everybody wants to be Superman. It seems impossible, the impossible. They did the impossible. These are our supermen of the Bible as we know it. Our superheroes of the Bible. But they had one thing going for them. They put God first.
Yeah.
They did what God wanted them to do. They were called of God to do it. And they went off and did it. They weren't being lazy. David killing Goliath seems odd. Somebody, 9 feet, 10 feet tall? And a short little guy, 4 foot something, because he was a boy, 4 foot something, taking out somebody 9 foot with just a rock and a slingshot. You know, these men did these things that were great, but they only did them because their God was great. And they knew how great their God is. Do you know how great your God really is? Are you just going to continue being complacent? Or are you going to be like the are you going to be complacent and like the murmuring children of Israel that are wandering through the wilderness? That's how your Christian walk's going to stay if that's what you want to do. It won't go anywhere. You just wander around until the day you die. And there's many Christians, that's all they're doing anymore. We live in the day and age now. That's all they're doing anymore. They don't see the power of God moving and working. They're just seeing very little bits and pieces of it. They're seeing the manna come from heaven every once in a blue moon to feed them and to sustain them. But then when there's a whole promised land for them, they're just satisfied walking around in the wilderness. Or are you going to be that generation that rises up? Or for some of us, are we going to be the Caleb and Joshua that says enough's enough and it's time for us to go up and take Jericho? Jericho was a huge city. Chariots, I think 6 chariots could fit across it. So line up 6 chariots and horses. And they might have 4 horses. So 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, all the way across. Imagine how wide that wall was. Almost the size of a block. It's a big wall. It might be smaller, maybe half a block wide. But that's a big, wide wall. Nothing was going through that wall. There was no way that you could get into that wall. But God, because these children of Israel said enough was enough, and God just said we could go up, we could take this country. They marched around 7 times. The walls came down. They believed. You're going to be that Rahab. You're going to be that Esther. You're going to be that Malachi. You're going to be Meshach, Radshach, and Abednego. You're going to be David. You're going to be Samson. Yeah, some of these men, we look at and they go, well, he fell, he did this. But look at the end of their life, what they did too. Don't look at all the bad that they did. They did good too. God still used them. And we do things bad too in our lives, but God still can use us. Just like he used David. Just like he used Samson. He fell, but God, he got back up and God still moved and worked him. Used him mightily. You know, are we going to be these superheroes of the Bible that we hold high in esteem? But none of these should be held higher than our God in Jesus Christ. Because a true superhero that came was Jesus Christ when he came and he died on that cross, because he created a way that we can have an eternity in heaven. We don't have to shed animal blood anymore because his blood covers it. He's a living sacrifice. When he rose from the dead, he could testify that, hey, because that lamb could not testify anymore. Once it was slain, it couldn't cover my sins anymore. But when I sinned again by accident, or I messed up, or I made a boo-boo. But Jesus can say, I know I'm working with him. And he asked for forgiveness. And his intentions, he made a mistake. But the Spirit came and smolded him again. And he said, Lord, forgive me, help me. And it was an instantaneous thing. So I have a way into heaven. But he did the most marvelous thing. So who are you going to be? One of these great men and women of God that are in the Bible? Or are you going to be one of these murmurers and complainers that wandered through the wilderness, Pastor? That wandered through this through these wilderness. Who are you going to be? Who are you going to choose to be? You want to see God move and work in this church. We all, as a congregation, have to put forth an effort greater than we all can. I believe we all are doing what we are doing, but we have to search ourselves that we're not one of those ones that are holding back, and all be part in unity.
Amen. Let's stand.